Chat with Traders, episode 32.
The biggest secret of the best traders in the world is that they're just like everyone else. However, they've worked hard to learn the markets and discover what works and what doesn't. But how can you hear about these journeys and get in on the strategies and tactics they use? You can do it by listening to Chat with Traders. Here's your host, Aaron Fifield.
All right, what's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Chat with Traders podcast, and this time you're listening in to episode number 32. So let me just say to start this off, I've actually received a lot of requests for this week's guest in recent months. Maybe it's because he's a straight shooter who doesn't mix his words, or maybe it's because he's bounced back from multiple harsh failures to become an exceptional trader. Whatever the reason may be, I know for certain you're going to appreciate the raw honesty and insight of this week's guest, Dan Shapiro. Coming up from humble beginnings, Dan called on the neighborhood loan shark to fund his first trading account, which got him through the door to one of the largest prop firms at the time. This is where he rubbed shoulders with many phenomenal traders who helped shape him into the trader he is today. In this interview, we ultimately focus on the mental and psychological aspects of trading. So we discover some of the darkest moments from Dan's trading career, how to handle losses and grind through slumps, trading the setup and not your P&L, and why you should care more about trading right rather than being right. So all in all, Dan was really great to talk to, and I trust you'll enjoy this episode. And actually, it may even be worthwhile for you to play this through twice just to ensure you don't miss anything. And of course, all the show notes and links, everything that's mentioned during the interview can be found at chatwithtraders.com/32. All right, guys, I'm Aaron Fifield, your host of Chat with Traders, and here is this week's guest from New York City, Dan Shapiro. Dan Shapiro, welcome to the podcast, man. How are you?
It was a pleasure, Aaron. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks a lot for coming on. How's your day been? Was it a good day trading?
It's a good day. We're all alive and kicking. Everything else is a cherry on top.
I like it. Look, thanks a lot for coming on. I've actually had a number of listeners mention that I should get you on the show, so it's really good to have you here.
And I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I know you've got an interesting story to tell. You're well experienced and speak about trading in a very raw and a very honest way, which I certainly appreciate. And I'm sure everyone listening is about to also. So don't hold back with your answers, and let's just start from the very beginning. So share with us how you initially got started trading. Where did it all begin for you?
Cool. So just very briefly, I know some of you guys know my story, some of you guys don't. I am in the New York City area. I grew up in Brooklyn. A lot of my friends, a lot of my friends were stockbrokers. If you guys remember all that crap that was going on in the 90s, a lot of them went away to camp for a little bit of time. The rest of us who were fortunate enough that weren't good at it, we had to do something else. So I went into the restaurant business with my dad and some other guy. And that business basically blew up in about a year and a half. And I kind of needed some direction. I really didn't have any direction in my life, which was kind of sad. I mean, looking back at it, it really is sad. And one of my friends who unfortunately 2 years ago passed away from cancer, he was also a stockbroker at one point, and he started trading in a place called Generic Trading, Carlin Financial. And for all your listeners, if you Google Carlin Financial or Generic Trading, and if any of you guys have heard my interviews with Lucci and Pete from the Lucci Group, St. Lucci Group, they Carlin Equities / Generic Trading was one of the biggest prop shops from about 1999 to about 2000 and whatever it was, 2005, 2006, and then they sold their business to the Royal Bank of Royal Bank of Canada, one of those, RBS or RBC, one of them, for exorbitant amounts of money, basically for their execution system and all that stuff. But so my friend was there. He was there for 2 weeks. He blew out of his account, and he told me about it. And I was like, hey, let me give it a shot. I don't know why. I had no money. I literally had no money. I borrowed money from a neighborhood loan shark, which probably wasn't the smartest thing to do. But again, where am I going to get the money, right? I really don't have too many choices. So I went to generic trading, and I got hired by one of the partners. His name is Ron Shear. If you guys Google Ron Shear, he's just a pretty known, respected guy. And that's where I met Meyer Hoffman. And Meyer turned out to be one of my mentors. And then from there, 1999 rolled in for the first, first year. I made money the first month and then didn't see a check for the next year or so. And then the internet craze rolled on. Just to kind of fast forward the story, it was pretty damn good, pretty good. We did all right. We did all right. I made a lot of great lifetime friendships with some of these guys who, if you Google, they've turned out to be huge fund managers and just a great group of core guys that we met along the way. Learned a lot from each of them. Try to take a lot of attributes from all of them. The driving force behind my early success was definitely Meyer Hoffman, probably top five best traders of all time from the prop world. Guy made hundreds of millions of dollars. And we all traded together. It was pretty awesome. And like I told the Lucci interviews, I was a byproduct of the internet craze. And at first it was great. But the reality is nobody knew how to trade back then. We were all products of the sidewalks that were paved with gold. All we did was buy dips after 3 days of buying. And, stocks would gap up 20, 30 points. And that was for about a year and a half. And then the reality struck that it was just more to that because after 9/11, everything changed. And I said it before, and I'm not ashamed of it. I did very well during the dot-com era, but then 2001 rolled in, 9/11 rolled in. I had an office of generic trading with when NASDAQ was at 5,000. And when the planes hit the building, my business completely fell apart. I lost a lot of my own money. And it took me basically about two and a half years to figure out what trading was. And I didn't make money for 2 years, and that's the reality. I didn't make any money for 2 years. And the one conversation you never want to have with your spouse, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners will really appreciate this, that conversation, well, Dan, you did all right. You did all right during the internet craze. It's 2 years later. You haven't taken home a single check. It's time to do something else for a living. You know what I'm saying? And when you're a trader and you hear that and you had – some pretty decent success, the last thing you want to have is that conversation because reality really kicks in. And bad enough during that time, I was incredibly depressed. The best parts of my days and nights were going to sleep. I used to literally certain nights just sob myself to sleep because I couldn't believe how much, how fast I completely crumbled down to the earth and had no control of trading because there was no path to profitability. There was nothing. There was no guidelines. There was no blueprint. There was nobody there to help me because everybody was in the same shoes as me because everybody was, again, the products of the dot-com era. And, again, when people ask me about how great those days were, yeah, they were great. But, it was great also when I was 16. I'm not 16 anymore. I'm 41. And, as much as I'd like to reminisce when I was 16, as much as I'd like to reminisce when during the dot-com era, the reality is it's a completely different market right now. And the greatest thing about the dot-com era, those 2 years that I didn't make money, it really made me appreciate what happens when you actually go on a good run. So when I finally started making money once again, roughly around 2000 – in the middle of 2003, towards the end of 2003, once I started making money again consecutively, that's when I really, really appreciated what I went through. And a lot of the new traders, I'm sure a lot of your new listeners are going through the same thing. And I always tell, the people in my live webinar every single day, there's no difference between me and you. There's absolutely no difference. Trading is a byproduct of your process. I don't care who you are. You could trade credit swaps, you can trade derivatives, you can trade bonds, E-minis, whatever you want to trade, okay? You are a product of your process, and there's nothing the market can do to you that you can't do to yourself. So once I started really figuring things out, it kind of clicked for me there. And trading for me, in my opinion, you don't need to go back to the drawing board every single time. It's more about tweaking. It's more about recognizing what you are doing wrong and just completely stopping it. I know for a lot of people, they're so emotionally attached to trading, and that's a whole different, you know, that's a whole different story. They're so emotionally attached to trading, they can't see what they're doing wrong because they're so absorbed by what they're seeing on social media, how fantastic it is, people are on vacation, trading off their iWatches, trading under a pool. I mean, who knows what they're trading? And the sad part is there are a lot of really great people out there that will show you things, but you know, you have to let go of all your bad habits. And that's, you know, pretty much the first stop for kind of cutting yourself off, you know, cold turkey and starting to the road, you know, to prosperity.
All right, that's excellent. So what we'll do is, since you've recently done a few interviews with the guys at Sanglucci, I'll link to those in the show notes. So if you want sort of a deeper insight to Dan's journey, sort of from day one to current times, you can check those out. So they'll be in the show notes at chatwithtraders.com/32. Definitely check those out. They're awesome interviews. But I'm really keen to sort of not recycle old information and get into some sort of the meat of this interview and get into some actionable advice. So let's not brush over those few years which you talked about how you just lost money. So you were day trading, you were showing up every day to trade, and for 2 years straight you just lost money. What motivated you to keep going, and why did you keep going and not quit to go find something
easier? Here's the deal. Once you taste, because keep this in mind, okay? I grew up very, very poor, okay? I grew up in the Brighton Beach section of Brooklyn, and, you know, it is predominantly middle to lower class people. It's the reality. And my mom was a manicurist. My dad was a waiter. My dad eventually left my mom. My mom was on welfare. So I grew up very, very poor, incredibly poor. All my friends grew up incredibly poor. And the one thing that I never wanted was to be rich. I just wanted to have enough money so I can eat. That's it. So when you go back to those 2 years, and I caught my first bit of pretty decent amount of money during, you know, during the heyday, it was discouraging that I couldn't figure out how to get back to there. So it wasn't much of motivation. It was more of, I didn't have any other options. You know what I mean? I didn't have any other options because I couldn't quit a business that I've tasted a very good amount of success in such a very, very short period of time for that year and, you know, year and a half run. And that's all it was. I mean, for a lot of people listening, you know, .com wasn't 10-year run. It was 15 months. That's all it was. It was 15 months of the greatest euphoric. I mean, people look at it now and see, you know, like ITK goes from, you know, 5 to 18. They're like, oh, my God. You have 25 ITKs a day. You know what I mean? They're all giving up ranges of $15, $20 a day. So it was more of desperation, man. I was hanging on for deal. I had no plan B. So I, you know, my plan B was killing myself. I mean, that was my plan B. I mean, just to keep real talk, that was plan B. You know, this didn't succeed. I was going to take myself out. And, that's where the emotional, you know, the emotional hate started coming out of me. And I really took this business for what it is. It's not this euphoric love fest that everybody thinks they're in love with. It's torture. Every single day to this day, there's vomit coming out of my mouth, and these are on good days, because there's always something that agitates me about trading. And when you finally come to the realization that trading is nothing but a job, okay, you're going to treat it like a job. And that's why there are no highs, there are no lows. It's work, okay? Whatever the market gives you is the market takes, because I am a swing trader by nature. In the last 2 years, I haven't seen a run went straight up since the bottom of 2009. So this was all new to us. Okay, this is all new. The last couple of years, this whole unicorn effect, this whole QE, it's all new to us. So we don't expect the market to keep going. So at some point, about a year and a half ago, I just stopped putting on positions. I had two positions on, three positions on, five. But I used to have 10, 12, 15 positions on all the time. Rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat. So going back to kind of what my motivation was, it was a pure act of desperation, because if I didn't succeed, we probably would not be sitting here. And that's completely real talk. I've spoken to many traders that went through mentally and psychologically the same scars that I went through. The most important part is to be strong enough to kind of wake up the next day. I mean, that really is the strongest part about it, because it's depressing, man. It really is depressing when you go from highs to lows, and you can't get back to that. You can't get back to that top of the heap again. Basically, that was my motivation. Just if I couldn't figure it out, me and you were not having this conversation today.
Yeah, right. No, I appreciate you being so honest with that. So, how do I say this? So you were making money initially, and then you went through a period of 2 years when you lost money consecutively. What was it that changed so much?
Well, first of all, it was that kind of wake up call by my wife, and she's like, "Listen, you got to get a real job. We have bills. The bank account is depleting. So you got to get your stuff together." And one night I remember, I just opened up my I forgot what system I was using before. Was it Reuters or whatever the hell it was? And I just started looking at charts, just thousands of thousands of charts. And I wanted to figure out, what am I doing wrong? What am I not seeing? Where's the correlation? Where is the advantage? Where's my edge? Where's the ability to find something and hone a process and absorb a process that can get me, forget about to where it was 99, to get me where I can make $100, okay? Take home that check, $100. Because people ask me all the time, how do I make $5,000 a day? How do I make $10,000 a day? How do I make $20,000 a day? My answer is always the same. You have to figure out how to make $100 a day first, okay? So my goal was figure out a process. Forget about the process. Figure out in the charts, okay, what is going to be there that I can make $100. That's it. Where can I make $100, and we'll go from there. So I started looking at a bunch of charts, and I started back testing thousands and thousands of charts. And I noticed something back then, which is so ironically it's kind of the backbone of the whole hashtag PS60 theory. I noticed that stocks, and I didn't use the word supply back then or demand back there, but I noticed stocks used to trade in intervals, okay, just like climbing upstairs. So, if you're going to go to the top of the Empire State Building, you're not going to jump from step one to step 15. You're going to go step one, step two, and you're going to stop. Take a breath, right? Step three, step four, take a breath because you're tired. On and on and on and on. And I started looking at all these things that I heard people talk about. Moving average. Well, what the hell is a moving average? I used to buy .com. If Yahoo went from 260 to 220 in 3 days, I buy the 220, Henry Blodgett would upgrade it with Merrill Lynch, and this thing would be 250 the next day, 260 the next day. So there was no such thing as technical analysis. So I started looking at all these things. So what are these moving averages? What are they? What is this? Why are people using these things? And I put it on my charts, which I never used before. Again, it was we looked at charts just to see the direction where a stock can go, but it was never an instance of, if the RSI goes to 90, it's overbought. If the MACD cross, I don't know what these things are. I still don't know to this day what MACD and RSI are. I'm not that smart enough, okay? If a stock is up 12 days in a row, I don't need to know that the RSI is at 95. The stock's up 12 days in a row. I can tell it's overbought. So back then, it was more of, let me figure out what these things mean. Okay. And what I started noticing were that stocks go, and again, I didn't use the word supply back then, but I started noticing that stocks go from supply to supply, which we use in modern day now, and stocks go from demand to demand. And the only way they ever have a clear path to the goal line is if all these moving averages, all these supply zones, all these linear regression lines, all these Bollinger Bands are out of the equation. Other than that, they are all stocks that are trading within ranges. And people hear that all the time. Stocks are trading within ranges. The problem is a lot of new traders can't tell the difference between a stock trading in a macro range within a micro channel or a stock that's naturally organically coming out of a channel. And that's why you see a lot of stocks hit supply. You don't even realize it because, again, nobody's ever explained that to you. Hit supply, get rejected, bam, bam, you're out of your money again. Again, you sit back and you sit to yourself, well, I'm the dark cloud. Something, you know, the evil bug is on me. Somebody is putting a voodoo doll on me. It's not that. It's just, again, you know, majority of stocks, they don't, you know, they're not tradable. It's just the reality. Most of the stocks are not tradable. They all move, but they're not tradable. And the problem with most traders and most traders tell me is, number one, they have no patience. Number two, when you're a young trader, and it doesn't mean your age, you have pretty much no bank. Let's be honest. You know, when you have, you know, not everybody borrows money from loan sharks to trade. Okay. So normally you don't have any money. Normally you don't have any pain tolerance. Normally you don't have any technical education. What you see is on social media, which is, you know, 90% of it is all, you know, is all a gimmick. Let's be honest. I'm trading 16 years. I've traded with some of the most phenomenal traders out there. And I know when they're struggling, when I'm struggling, I see some, you know, 22-year-old kid talking about he's hit the last 60 trades in the same market I'm trading for. It's comical, but it's okay. You know, it's okay. I wish everybody the best. But the ironic part of trading for me and the whole mental cycle was trying to really desperately figure out what everything meant. Okay. And I just went countless hours, and then I figured out what the common denominator for stocks that were working and stocks weren't working. And what I came to find was there was an arbitrage, and that arbitrage turned out to be supply that was confirmed years later by a pivot, which I use now, and is confirmed on a 60-minute cycle, which has been kind of a godsend for me where we are present day. But yeah, man, that was I don't even remember what the question was, but mentally, man, that was it. I mean, that was that was a kind of a big deal for me at that time, out of pure desperation.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent answer. And just while we're on that subject, and you were looking through these thousands of charts, you know, day after day, what were you actually looking at? So if someone's listening and, you know, they're, you know, not yet profitable, they're still losing money most, you know, let's just say months, you know, struggling to find a way to exploit the market, and they go through looking at all these charts, what sort of things can they look at on these charts to try and find some common denominators that might lead them to profitable trades or help find an edge?
Well, here's what kind of my open-ended question, everybody. Number one, and I talked about this on my original interview with Pete Lucci. Number one, you have to figure out who the hell you are. That's number one. Okay, you can't be somebody else. And that's why I believe all these alert services are probably the worst thing that can really curb the progress of a new trader. Okay, because they're looking at social media and one guy is making everything look so phenomenal. So when they can't duplicate the results, again, emotions kind of kick in. But you have to figure out who you are, okay? Do you want to be a swing trader? Do you want to be a scalper? Do you want to trade E-minis? Do you want to trade options? Do you want to trade, pairs? You know, a lot of people trade pairs. They're very, very successful. Do you want to be a rebate trader? I know guys still to this day trade rebate and still do very, very well. You know, what do you want to be? I mean, what do you want to be? And the magic answer to that question is there's nothing on a chart, okay, on a specific chart that is going to jump off the page and say, this is the right thing to do. Okay, there's nothing. Everything is trial and error. So I can tell you, hey, Aaron, look, here's what I look for, right? In a normal uptrending market, here's what I look for. I look for a stock that puts in an initial move, bases out for at least 5 days, and once it gets above that initial move, I buy the stock. Okay, fantastic, Dan. You've done everything what every other trader has done for the last 25 years. Okay, great. But here's the problem. When you look at a chart, okay, you're looking at a very gray area. You look at the top of the range, you look at the bottom of the range. In between, there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of gray areas, which I've discussed in nausea. There's a lot of – there's thousands of moving parts within a little bubble, okay? And the problem is you can't just look at a chart and say to yourself, well, if the stock breaks 25 because that's the high for the, you know, for the last 7 days, I'm going to buy it. Here's the problem. If you don't know, okay, where your supply zones are, there could be a supply zone, right, at $25.06. Okay, stock hits that supply. And for all you guys who are new listeners who have never heard me talk about supply and demand, supply zones are, let's just use it to the upside, okay? Supply zones are where emotional buyers meet technical sellers, okay? And if you don't know that supply zone is there, you are going to get rejected 90% of the time, and then the stock is going to fail, and you're going to say to yourself, well, this doesn't work. Or again, the antichrist is in me. There's a poltergeist in my room. Something's wrong because everybody else is making money except for me. So the very bare essence of a chart will never paint a picture, okay? Because again, there's so many different grenades within that chart, within that cycle, within that channel that you're looking at. If nobody's ever sat down with you and showed you what those things are, you will never be able to even anticipate that there's a monster coming potentially out of the closet, and you will lose money consecutively and eventually, again, roll out that revolving door that many traders, unfortunately, have to face reality and go out of. So it's a very tough answer. You know what I'm saying, Aaron? It's a very tough answer. It's not as simple as, well, here's what I look for, MACD cross. Well, Dan Shapiro doesn't know what a MACD cross is. So how can I explain to you what a MACD – if a stock MACDs, right? Yeah, man, there's a lot of moving parts. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts. I think the longer you do this for a living, I think – and it, kind of using it in a poker analogy, I think the more hands you see, okay, the more chances then you'll figure out that how the movie ends, okay? And I say this all the time, the new trader, the modern trader, the whole, the whole renaissance that we've seen in the last several years, that everybody's kind of jumping back into day trading. The reality is they're not prepared for all these moving parts. They're just not. It's just a scenario of looking at something black and white, you know, and taking it for fair value. But with all these different scenarios that are out there with high frequencies and, different hedge funds placing different – I don't want to go into that. But there's a lot of moving parts. And I think what a trader needs to do is watch a lot of hands, play a lot of hands, but play the premium hands, okay? So not every single day is tradable. As my second interview with Meyer Hoffman, he said, you know, this market, you could sit 2-3 days and not catch a wave. And on the fourth day, like the stars and the moon, everything aligns and you'll make your, X amount of dollars. So it's a different tape, man. It's a different tape. It's for, it really is for responsible traders, responsible adults. You could be the nicest person in the world. And I say this all the time. This is the only business in the world that, you could want it bad enough. I hear it all the time. Do you want it bad enough? Yeah, you could want it as bad as you want. It just, it doesn't translate into you being successful. It's like, I want to be 6'2", but if I don't put on, my wife's 4-inch heels, I won't be 6'2". So you can want it as bad as you want. The reality is, luck does play a big part of it. I'm not going to deny it. Being in the right place at the right time, gave me basically a couple of years that I bought my time. I basically bought my time. You have to look at premium setups once you figure out, who you are, what type of trader you want to be. And then you really have to avoid, shooting yourself in the foot. Because again, I say it all the time, there's nothing, that somebody else can do to you that you can't do to yourself. And, once you figure out what not to do, I think you'll be okay. I think you'll be okay. And the most important part is it'll buy you time. It'll buy you shelf life to figure out where your specific edge is.
Okay. I really like that. That's an awesome answer, Dan. So we've talked about how you lost money, throughout that 2-year period, in quite depth. So Let's talk about how you go through losing periods these days. Sure, they're not quite as dramatic as 2 years at a time, but you know, you still go through losing periods. I mean, everyone does. So how do you stay in, I don't know, good spirits? How do you keep your head up through losing periods, and how do you break out of that?
Yeah, that's a great question, Aaron. As we previously discussed, I get tons of emails all the time, and they're never asking me, well, what do you think about this chart? You know, again, what I think about a chart is irrelevant. The question always is, how do you make it through, man? How do you do it? How do you mentally stay afloat? And you know, there's a great answer to that. Number one, and here's my advice. Number one, guys, turn off your P&L. Turn it off. Turn it off. I don't even know where my P&L box is on my platform. Turn it off. And the reason why you have to turn off your P&L is, number one, this whole business is all emotion versus reality, right? The more you're emotionally committed to a trade, the more chances than not you're going to completely mistrade it, and everything you're going to do in this trade is wrong, and then everything is going to happen after the trade is over is probably going to make you angrier and angrier, because eventually the trade will probably work out your way, okay? So the first thing to do is turn off your P&L, okay? Number one, and here's kind of relevant advice here. Also, you want to turn off your P&L because if you're having a good day, and I hear this all the time, Dan, I have a $30,000 account, okay? What should be my goal for the day? And my answer to that is, your goal for the day is to make it to the next day, okay, which has nothing to do with your P&L. And what happens is, when you're trading well, okay, if you look at your P&L and you say to yourself, well, my goal is $1,000 for the day, okay, and you hit your goal within the first hour or so, and then I know a lot of traders, they'll shut off their day, right? They'll completely shut off their day and they'll leave. Here's the problem. The day that you can make their 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 5 grand, whatever it is, whatever interval you trade, whatever tier size you trade, the day you can make that money really, really quickly, you don't realize it, but you're playing a premium hand. You're playing the kings, you're playing the jacks, you're playing the aces, you're playing the queens, okay? So that day is turning out to be a premium hand. And what you're doing is, you're taking a pair of aces and you're putting in a bet of $50. That's basically what you're doing. And you're telling the guy on the other that's playing against you, I'm all in for $50. And once you hit that pot, you say to yourself, okay, I'm done for the day. So you're losing out on a premium hand. Every professional trader will tell you, what we're looking for is premium. We're looking for those pocket aces. Okay, so the day that you can make 2, 3, 4, 5 grand for the first 30 minutes, 45 minutes, you're in a very, very bullish scenario, playing a premium hand. So the last thing you want to do is say to yourself, well, I'm up a grand for the day, I'm done. And you don't realize that 1 grand could turn into 3,000, could turn into 6,000, could turn into 10,000, because you're riding that euphoric hand. You're riding those pocket aces. And I don't care how misguided you are, everybody eventually plays pocket aces. And the most important part is, if you remove the P&L box, those pocket aces really turn out to something. On the way down, it's even more important to turn off your P&L. I already know on my tier size, let's just use 1,000 sure lots. Just make it easier. I already understand, if I'm putting on a trade and the stock goes a dollar against me, I know mentally, I mean, I know I can do the math, you know, put on 1,000 shares, down a point, you're down a grand, okay? But mentally, if you see it, visually, if you see it, that 1,000 turns into 100, might as well turn into 100,000, because your next trade, you don't want to get down 1,200. You don't want to get down 1,500. So what you're going to do is, you're going to trade the P&L and not trade the setup, okay? So you could be looking at a 5-star setup. A stock comes out of a 2-month range, comes out, you know, takes a 20, 30 cent spike, comes back into your, you know, turn, comes back into your entry, goes down 10, 15 cents. You're already down a grand. You're mentally already distraught. You sell the position at a 10, 15 cent loss. Next thing you know, 35 seconds later, the stock's at the highs of the day. So you're mentally already destroyed. You're done. You're done. Once you're trading your P&L instead of the setup, you might as well you might as well, you know, wrap it up for the day, because nothing good is ever going to happen when you're trading the P&L. And the more deeper and deeper you get into the day, the more erratic mistakes you're doing, the more eager you are, the more you're, if you're a man, the more testosterone levels are rising, okay? And all you're doing is committing further and further into emotionally protecting your P&L and not trading trading the setup the proper way. So that's my kind of my first tip. Everybody goes through slumps, okay? Everybody goes through slumps. I had a week 2 months ago, okay? 2 months ago, I went from having one of my top three biggest weeks the prior week to just not getting anything going. I mean, I went through Monday through Thursday, I couldn't make a dime. I wasn't really losing any money. I just couldn't make a dime. Like, everything was wrong, right? Everything was wrong. Stocks were snapping back out of breaking down out of bottom channels on shorts. Stocks were getting rejected on longs. There was reload sellers on my longs. There were reload buyers on my shorts. Just nothing went right. You know, nothing went right. And I sat there, you know, I sat there a couple of days and I just started laughing. Eventually start laughing. You can't take this business. You can't take this business to heart. Okay. You can't think that this is, you know, every bad thing is pointed at you. Okay. You'll go through these horrific times that you can't get anything going. You'll go through these horrific times. Like, perfect example. Last year, about a year ago, I don't know if any listeners remember, there was a huge run into the close on these ag stocks, these potash and Intrepid Potash and all these stupid things. And I took Intrepid Potash overnight, and the whole group was like down 25% the next day. The next day. I mean, it was just, I was like, what? Wait a minute. You're telling me there's no specific company news and I'm down $4 on this trade, which is insane. And mentally, I was like, well, I could try to make this money back today. Okay. Let me see what the market gives me today. Okay. Let me see, because I've learned long enough, the revenge trade does not work. Okay. Anytime you have any type of raw emotion going into a trade, you're going to mess it up. Okay. So what I learned a long time ago is there's not one event, bad event in your trading career that should be able to take you out of your game. Okay. Things happen all the time. Stocks get downgraded, bad, you know, FDA news. You know, I try not to trade a lot of biotech, especially overnight, because they blow up all the time. But the most important part of everything is I understand the highs and lows of this business because of what I went through after 9/11. So for me, when I go on a really big hot streak, I'm not impressed because I expect to make money. Obviously, every trade that I put on, I feel like I'm going to make money. I feel there's certain days, I can walk on water, and then there's days I can't get anything going. You know what I mean? And those days you just say to yourself, you know what? It just wasn't meant to be. You don't need to keep on piling on positions. I could figure out within the first 30 minutes if I'm going to have value in the day. So if I'm wrong in the first couple of trades, what's the point of me keep on piling it on, right? Because it escalates. It escalates very, very quickly. You could go from being down $3,000 to be down $8,000. $8,000 turns into 14. 14 turns into 21. What's the point? Cut yourself off. Understand there's, you know, you're not getting a premium hand, okay? Emotionally, there's nothing you can do. You can't cry your money back to you. Okay. So, you know, but the most important part when you go through a slump, okay, just realize that, you know, sometimes the easiest thing to do is just take a step back. Okay. Take a step back. Just watch the market. Watch the order flow. Sometimes order flow won't translate into what's going on the surface. It just won't, because order flow most of the time will not be organic, okay, and that's where social media, that a lot of these people, you know, tout and hype these stocks for everybody to jump in, you know, all that stuff. So you got to just take a step back and just say, hey, look, you know, it's just not my day. Maybe it's not my 2 days, but you know what? I know what I need. I know what I want. And until I get those premium hands, there's no point to do it. The problem a lot of traders have is just they can't accept defeat, okay. And there's a big picture there, okay? And you go back into the theory of war, right? There's plenty of battles that are lost, right? Plenty of battles. Battles are lost all the time. The most important thing is to win the war. So I could lose a battle, right? I could fight with Tesla. and you know there's a reload seller sitting there at the top of the range, and it just the guy won't let go. The guy won't let go. And you know what? I'll figure that part out. You know, once it breaks the range, I'll get out. I'll take my loss, but I'm not going to lose the war on one trade. And I see it all the time that many traders are so fixated about being right instead of fixated about trading properly. And that snowballs into day after day after day until they realize, you know what, this is just not for me. And the saddest part about the whole trading cycle is most people will never trade up to their potential, okay, because they won't give themselves a chance to playing those premium hands. And they take everything to heart, and they believe that everything they do is the result of bad things, just everything bad. You know, somebody just has this evil eye on you. And the reality is, you know what? The market most of the times won't give you what you want. Most of the times it won't celebrate your existence. All the market wants to do is take your money and take your confidence. Because remember, I could go on, and this is a very important point. I could go on a run 3 weeks in a row, right? 3 weeks in a row, have a magnificent run. And this is how fragile us traders are. You can go 2 days without making money, and you've completely lost your confidence. Think about that. Think about how many times traders have done that. You could go on a three-week run doing the same thing every day, every day, every day, every day. You lose money 2 days in a row. You start questioning everything you did for your whole career. Okay? And I say this all the time. You don't lose your confidence. It gets transferred to another trader. Okay? It gets transferred to another trader. Okay, because you can't lose something that is obviously shown you promise or prosperity in the past. You're just a product of what's happening in the moment. And just sometimes we can't control what we see in the markets. So instead of snowballing it, letting it go out 2, 3, 5 days, take a step back. You know, do something nice for yourself. Okay, get a massage. Okay, go to the beach. Go to the pool. Go to the sauna. Do something nice for yourself, okay? And when you clear your head, you come back, just watch the order flow. Is it telling you the same thing that it told you 2 weeks ago? Is it telling you the same thing, hell, that it told you 2 days ago? What's different about this tape today that wasn't different from a week ago, okay? And little by little, when you take the step back, you finally kind of see it in a weird way. You kind of see it. And once you see it, you can start making adjustments. And remember, at the end of the day, everything we do is all adjustments. It's one big adjustment, because I say this all the time. The stock market has been around God knows how long. You know, what was it, 1887, 1897, whatever it was. But trading, the art of physically trading for yourself, is less than 25 years old. Okay, so we are all still looking for answers. Think about that. We're all looking for answers. Everybody's in the same boat. The market changes all the time. The nuances changes all the time. Technology is changing by the second. Okay, chart patterns get obsolete. Strategies go away. Okay, so we're all in the same boat, man. We're all looking for that next edge. The problem is most traders are fixated on what they think is the right thing to do. And I say it all the time. If 90% of the traders are losing money, why would you be in the same boat as them, right? Why would you be looking at the same thing? Why would you be looking at the same indicator, in the same studies, in the same matter? Hell, in the same stocks. So slumps are controllable, okay, for most of my friends. Like I don't hear anymore any of my buddies for years that, you know, are going through something more than like a month. Like you can have a bad month. I mean, knock on wood, I've been doing, you know, pretty well for the last several years. But, you know, it's very common that you can go on a big run and then just things don't work. It just happens. And I think mentally you just have to get away. You know, go on vacation, take a couple of days off, go to the Hamptons, you know, it's summertime. Take your kids to the park. Do something. You know, do something that's for you, that has nothing to do with bids and offers. Get mentally centered, man. And I tell people all the time, like I used to listen to music every single day. Certain days I want to be depressed. Sometimes I trade better when I'm angry. So I'll listen to Sade. And that woman gets me depressed as hell, right? Can you imagine listening to Sade before the bell rings, right? Some woman in Somalia with no shoes. My God, man. You know, you know, I don't want to hear this, but, you know, it gets me depressed. And sometimes I trade better when I'm angry. Some people, you know, do yoga, meditate, right? Take Pilates, go for a run. Do something that mentally is going to make you happy. And slumps are there. They're part of the business. It's the cost of doing business. But at the end of the day, everybody goes through it, okay? Everybody absorbs them eventually. But they embrace them at the same time because it makes you go through your adjustments. And again, at the end of the day, the modern day trader or the modern trader in general is just one adjustment away from being from not being profitable to being profitable. And once you get that one edge, you ride it until it stops working.
Absolutely. Now that's an awesome answer, Dan. Thanks for really, really going deep on that. That was really cool. So I'm keen to ask you about another topic, slightly different from what we've covered already, and that would be routine. How important is routine on a trading day? Do you have a routine that you follow?
Yeah, I have. Absolutely. Here's the deal, kind of putting generally how I look at a day. Well, number one, when there's an uptrending market, I don't even want to day trade. I couldn't care less about day trading. Day trading for me is subsidized cash flow. That's all it is. I make my money as a swing trader. When there's a trending market, there's defined ranges, everything is moving in a direction. So for me, just managing my book is the most important part. That's it. I don't care about day trading. It doesn't make a difference to me. There's scalp, Apple, Google, it's irrelevant. My core positions are my core positions. I trade around them. When they're down, I try to protect them. But in a market like this, which I believe right now is a phenomenal, phenomenal cash flow market, I think the ranges have been just phenomenal. I think the consolidation of these ranges have been great. My routine every day, every single day is number one. I used to hear this, and I think a lot of traders hear this also. There's an old adage, and it says that dumb money trades in the morning, and smart money trades in the afternoon. And I used to sit there, and I said to myself, well, that doesn't make sense to me, because I trade in the morning. And again, as I joke around all the time, I might be the self-proclaimed king of the idiots, but I'm not stupid. So by somebody telling me that the dumb money trades in the morning, I didn't understand that. Okay, I didn't understand that. But if you break that down, if you break down that statement, think about this. There's two kinds of people. There's two kinds of traders. The one that was profitable the day before and the one that lost money, right? There's nothing in between. You either lost money or you made money, okay? So the psychology behind this is the guy who made money can't wait, right? You see her all the time. Ooh, I can't wait for the next day. Again, which is completely ridiculous. But that person, okay, is already emotionally committed because he or she feels that they've turned the corner, right? They turned the corner and they're waiting for day two to start trading, start putting together a winning streak. The trader who lost money is waking up and say, well, it's a new day. Forget about what happened. It's time to redeem myself, baby, right? Today's turnaround Tuesday, right? Today's turnaround Tuesday. Today's the day. So they're gung-ho. This goes for a lot of new traders, a lot of young traders, a lot of young men as well. You got your juices flowing. Again, your testosterone is off the charts. 9:30 rings. You are ready to jump out of your shoes, right? That damn opening bell rings. You're ready to go. So the emotional money always flows in the first 3 hours of the day, okay? One guy is playing catch-up. One guy is trying to increase or add on to what he did the next day. So the candles, if you notice, the first hour and a half or so, 2 hours or so, the candles are much more exaggerated to the upside and to the downside because people are chasing the rainbow. Okay, one guy is trying to play catch up to get his money back. The other guy is trying to extend his gains. Okay, so they're trying to jump on the hot stock or jumping on the hot trend or the hot range or the hot news. And the biggest exaggerated moves are for the first 3 hours. So I try to, if I'm trading cash flow, number one, I already have an idea what I want to do. I already have an idea from the night before. If I'm trading GPro, if I'm trading Apple, if I'm trading the IWM. Like, for example, tonight, I already have a specific plan course of action for tomorrow. So if we gap down tomorrow, right, and the market starts going red to green, look, I want to buy SPYs. I want to buy IWM. So I already have a course of action. So I feel that if more, for example, like specifically for tomorrow, so if I feel that if shorts are caught on a washout, you know, and they capitulate on the bottom of the range and all the volume is, we're going to have this snapback dead cat bounce. So my mental approach for the next trading day, specifically for tomorrow, is, okay, I know what I want to happen. And if the dumb money, right, if the dumb money, as we were all taught that the dumb money trades in the morning, if the dumb money starts chasing that specific course of action, everything should be fine, okay? And that first 3 hours will give you the biggest emotional commitment to the market by traders. Whether they're uneducated or whether they are educated is a different story. But that first 3 hours is the most important part for me. Now, 90% of my cash flow day is done by lunchtime. You know, maybe I'll do a trade here and there in the afternoon, but the afternoon, it's more of a positioning period, okay? Because traders, a lot of traders, they're positioning for the next day. So if you notice, a lot of stocks, and I talk about this in live webinar all the time, a lot of stocks are pinned or pegged to their specific range breakout level. So that's why a lot of stocks, people will buy these stocks in the afternoon, and they'll go up a little bit and they'll crash, and only to see them go up the next day. Because think about it, a stock usually will put in 90-95% of its range in the first three and a half hours. Okay? So by the time the afternoon rolls around, it's exhausted, right? It's like you're climbing the Empire State Building. They say, hey, you just climbed 60 stories, and you're like, oh great, I did it. It's a victory. Oh, by the way, you gotta climb up another 60 to get to the top. Right? You're gonna be exhausted. And that's exactly what the stocks do. They get exhausted by the afternoon, and most traders will not recognize this, and most traders will commit to the afternoon session realizing that there's no money there most of the time. There's no money there unless you're trading the fades, because a lot of stocks do give up gains towards the end of the day, and that's where a lot of the stocks really get washed out, especially high-flying throughout the day that are starting to put in lower highs on several channels. But the interval in the morning is the most important part for me. I can make my day in the first two and a half hours and kind of babysit my positions from the morning going to the afternoon. If I have a good runner, I'll keep it overnight. But it's very, very important to me not to play catch up, okay? Because if you miss your window, like if I miss my window in the morning, knowing that the biggest emotional commitment is in the morning, I don't play catch up. I don't need to play catch up in the afternoon. I don't need to see my P&L green for the day, because you know what? Tomorrow's the next day. You know, tomorrow's another day. And if I get the premium hand the following day, then fine. I mean, what premium can I possibly expect? If I miss my first 3.5 hour window, 3 hour window, where's my premium in the afternoon? Right? If I know everything's getting pegged, where's the premium in the afternoon? There is none. And, you know, you go from playing premium cards to playing the 2-9 offsuit again. And most traders just don't know that. So routine is a very, very important part. You know, some people love trading pre-market. Somebody loves trading aftermarket. For me, I look at it and say, look, if I can't make money for 7 hours in the day, what the hell is the point of me trading for another 3 hours? Okay, I have young kids. I'd rather spend my time with them. So a routine is very, very important. I think you can't compromise your process. I think you can't prostitute your account, okay, and put it to, put it to the fire. You know, trading is not a sport. It's not supposed to be fun. It's not supposed to make you happy. It's not supposed to give you a boost of adrenaline. It's supposed to be boring, lethargic, very orderly, and just treat it like a business. So routine is definitely important. Just the way a restaurant opens up every single day, they set the tables. The lunch crowd comes in. And if somebody orders, a 10-ounce filet mignon, they don't put it out on a paper plate, right? Because they're not going to prostitute their business for the sake of going through the motions. So same thing as trading. Trading is a business. You want to make sure it's functioning properly. And like every other business, you have to recognize that, number one, just to use the restaurant analogy, your crowd on Monday afternoon or Monday evening or Tuesday evening will be a lot slower than it will be on a Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night. And you go with that approach. You go with that approach, and, you know, you don't You don't subsidize, okay? You don't subsidize to the point of clicking a mouse. You do what you have to do to make sure you're around tomorrow. And I say this all the time. I don't care what your process is. There's not one trade out there that is more important that will compromise what you've been doing as a process as a whole. So, again, like when we talk about there's a lot of moving parts, there's tremendous amount of moving parts. And, again, the more you're exposed to the markets every single day, the more you'll see them and you'll kind of have an idea how the movie is going to end at the end.
I like it. Awesome answer, Dan. So let's just do one more question and that'll probably take us through.
Sure.
I mean, I have to ask you about your mentor. So Meyer Hoffman, who you mentioned briefly at the beginning, what are some of the standout traits and maybe the characteristics that you believe make him such an insanely successful trader?
Well, here it is. Meyer, here, we had some notable guys with us. We had also another guy that, for all you guys who are exposed to the prop world, there was a guy that I started trading with years ago. His name was Jason Lieber. Okay, Jason was a disciple of Meyer. Okay, a lot of us were a disciple of Meyer. He was a partner at this place called Schottenfeld. Schottenfeld Associates that he left, started a hedge fund 4 years ago. He took the hedge fund from like $4 million to $100 million. Okay, and he used the principles what Meyer taught us. And Meyer, and here's the one misconception. Okay, here's the one misconception. Meyer was never a guy who would sit you down next to him and say, this is what you should be doing. He was more of, you're being a putz. And what you're being a putz used to mean was you're completely doing something that is outside of your personality. So Meyer believed in the idea of stocks will go higher after they go lower, right? So your complete principle of, well, Warren Buffett, right? You buy low, you sell high, okay? Meyer's thinking was if a stock is high, it's going to come in and then it's going to go much higher. Okay. And considering the environment we were in, time will make you right. Okay. So there wasn't a specific thing he ever sat me down and said, hey, Dan, you know what? You should be doing this or you should be doing that or avoiding this. Because remember, we were all products of the internet craze. But what he did teach me was something very, very simple. Okay. You're not smarter than the market. You're not. Okay. If something's going higher, okay, it's not overbought. I don't care if it's up 35 days in a row. It's not overbought. You know why it's not overbought? As long as somebody is willing to pay that price, okay, and there's a fair and orderly market, that means fair value for the stock is that price. So what Meyer used to tell me is very simple, and people used to say this all the time. When the market was finally coming in, right, when the market was coming in, and he said, whatever goes down should go lower. So in other words, Cisco, people saying all the time, Cisco is at 150. There's no way Cisco will go to 120. No way goes 100. Won't break 100. Breaking 75? Breaking 50? No way it goes to 20. I'm a buyer at 15. Right? So the reality of what Meyer's greatest influence, and I think what I really absorbed back then was price action dictates everything. Okay. My opinion means nothing. Means absolutely nothing. I could look at a chart, I could grab all the data, I could analyze it 12 ways through Friday. Okay. My opinion doesn't matter. If price action is saying something that's different than my thesis, then price action is the king. And I am not smarter than price action. As my wife says all the time, you're an idiot. You don't know anything. Right? I don't know how to do anything. I would have to pay three people to screw in a light bulb, okay? But I did figure out this game a long time ago, and the greatest gift that Meyer taught me was that don't fight price action. Forget about the trend. Don't fight price action, okay? Price action is everything. Bad news comes out. The market absorbs it, takes it higher. Don't think about it. The market is screaming at you that they're embracing bad news. That's bullish. Good news comes out. The market is embracing it as bad news. Don't try to fight it. Okay. Don't try to, you know, analyze a headline. If people are selling a headline, that means they're selling the headline. That means the stock goes lower. So don't overanalyze. Be proactive. Whether that's sitting on the sidelines, that's up to you. Because I see it all the time now in this specific tape. Well, you got to be patient. Every day you got to be patient, right? The biggest bull markets, you got to be patient. Oh, you got to sit on your hands. Why? sitting on your hands is for lack of process, right? Lack of strategies. And that's why there's a big difference between what a stock picker is and what a professional trader is. And there's nothing wrong with being a stock picker. If you're a long bias guy, this is probably not the market for you. But there's nothing wrong with it. But at least proactive. Be proactive about it. Own up to it. Say, you know what? This is just not for me. And it'll be an easier day down the road. But price action is king. Meyer was a phenomenal, phenomenal trader. Phenomenal. I mean, he would be managing 30, 50 stocks at a time. His P&L would be up, you know, $1 million here, $1 million there for the day. It'd be insane. And I used to, you know, to be all honest, I used to get depressed looking at it because, you know, you see $1 million, you're trying to get back and you're up like 20, 30 grand, and, you know, which is again, nobody's complaining. But when you start making decent money and then, you know, you obviously get to the pinnacle of your session, when you see a guy making $1 million, it depressed you, never motivated me, depressed the crap out of me. Holy crap. How's this guy making $1 million a day? Not every day, obviously, but, you know, he used to go on these runs and, he was awesome. You know, he was awesome. Again, a lot of us were, disciples from his tree. Listen, again, I've never been embarrassed to say that I'm, you know, I was fortunate enough to be a byproduct of the internet craze. But the sad reality is I went through so much, mentally, emotionally, that, you know, scarred me for many, many years. And the ironic part of it is I started trading in the end of 98, start of 99, but I became a trader roughly around 2004, middle of 2003, 2004. So it's not easy, guys. You know, it's not easy by no stretch of the imagination. But the one piece of advice I will give to you, if you are committed to this business, turn off social media. Read good blogs. I'm not talking about some 19-year-old kid that made $3,000. Read, and there's nothing wrong with that. I encourage young traders. If I started trading at 19, man, it would have been great. You know, I'm so jealous of these young kids, 19, 20, 21 years old. They're making all this money, and it's phenomenal, phenomenal. But, you know, read depth. Read what, you know, veteran traders have done. Guys like Barton Biggs and guys like what's that guy's name? I mean, a lot of these older guys. Anyway, I'm skipping a lot of names. But you know, just read what people have gone through. You know, read their experiences, and not the good experiences. Nobody cares about the good experiences. Read what people have gone through. You know, personal lives. You know, every trader I know has blown out. Every trader I know, Meyer blew out, you know, 3-4 years ago from First New York. You know, I mean, it's the reality. Everybody knows it. So everybody blows out. Everybody has, you know, rough patches in their life. You know, you have to have good people around you. No leeches, no bloodsuckers, no yes men, no salesmen. You know, really understand the nuances of this business. You know, try new things. You know, I hear people all the time, well, I'm only an option trader. I don't believe in equities. Well, but, you know, you trade weekly options. Yes, well, you do realize weekly options, 75% expire worthless. Well, I didn't know that. Well, yeah, they do. You know, try to expose yourself to different things. You know, try to trade options. Try to trade E-minis if you can. Try to trade small caps, mid caps, large caps, high beta. ETFs, which I'm a very, very big believer of. I haven't really traded too much ETFs in the last couple of months, but, you know, try everything. And if you want it bad enough, sometimes it's just not good enough. It's the reality, man. I never sell dreams. I only talk reality. You can want it as bad as you want. You could be the nicest human being, but, you know, you really commit yourself to, you know, to omitting all the bad things that you're doing to yourself day in, day out. And if you have a good mentor or somebody that you respect, just keep asking questions. Keep on spamming them. Keep on annoying them until you get it right, man. And you know, again, you don't need to be right. You know, you don't need to be good on everything. You just need to be good at a few things. And you know, this market's changing. I try to tweak every single day. Like I've developed this PS60 theory. Nobody trades it but me. I stumbled onto Bonnet about a year ago because I was going through a couple of rough days. And by accident, I just saw something. I saw an arbitrage in the charts that I'm using to this day, and it works pretty well. But stay up, man. Stay up. You know, don't think you're alone, man. Don't think you're alone. Guys. We're all products of bravado, and we want to show how strong and manly we are. And I'd like to present that in front of my kids, but sometimes, man, we're all human beings. We laugh, we cry. We have our bad days mentally. We just sometimes don't want to put up with anything. And, those days are what makes us us. Those are the days that makes us human beings. Forget about being traitors. So, if it's meant to be, that's the cruel reality. If it's meant to be, it's going to be. But don't shoot yourself in the process. That's the most important thing. Wait for premium setups. Wait for premium hands. And no matter how you trade, get that green light, man. Get that wind at your back. And when you get it, you got to push. Push really hard because it doesn't last long. Okay. And stay up, guys. You'll be all right. You'll be all right. For all you new guys, just keep studying, keep learning, filter out the noise, keep asking questions. And I think you'll be all right.
Absolutely. Yeah. You hit on a ton of great points there a ton of great points throughout the whole interview. So Dan, this has been really, really great. Thanks again for coming on, and I really appreciate it. And
Aaron, it's a pleasure, man. Thank you very much for having me.
No trouble whatsoever. So before you go, can you share with listeners where they can go to find out more about you and also how they can connect with you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter. I'm on Twitter and StockTwits at DanShep55. If anybody ever needs to reach me, you can just email me at accessatrader@yahoo.com. I don't dwell on Axe as a Trader because, just like everything else, just one cog in my, I run a 7-hour live webinar. I don't market the damn thing because, again, if you haven't figured out what I do by now, who I am, and the people that I deal with every single day, then you just don't get it. I think more people are impressed about the wrong things, about the bright lights. And I say it all the time, when people come to New York, they're attracted by Times Square, but the rich people don't live in Times Square. Okay, the rich people live in the Upper East Side, Central Park, and all that stuff. So, you can get in touch with me. I'm pretty accessible, hence the name Axe as a Trader. We do run a live 7-hour webinar, which we go through live scenarios every single day. Everything is laid out in front of you. There's no trick photography. There's no editing. We have a great group of human beings, a lot of older people who really get it. A lot of people who get it. And, it's a cool place. It's a cool place, and started out as a kind of a hobby 4.5 years ago, actually turned into a business. And like all my endeavors, I try to make sure I don't prostitute the product for anything. So feel free to check us out. But again, I don't market it a lot. And, everybody knows where we are. So if you need to stop by, ask us some questions, check out what we do. My pleasure. If not, we could always be social media buddies.
Good stuff. Well, I think everyone's going to really, really enjoy this interview. Thanks again, Dan.
And, awesome, Aaron.
Take care, and let's talk soon.
Thanks, buddy. Have a great evening, guys.
You've come to the end of this episode of Chat with Traders, but don't worry, more great episodes are on the way. To stay updated with each great new episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and we'd love it if you leave us a rating and review. We'll see you next time on Chat with Traders.